Native Voice 1.
I won't grow up.
I won't grow up.
I don't want to go to school.
I don't want to go to school.
Just to learn to be a parrot.
Just to learn to be a parrot.
And recite a silly rule.
And recite a silly rule.
If growing up means it would be beneath my dignity to climb a tree, I'll never grow up, never grow up, never grow up. Not me.
Terrific. So what you just heard on the radio out there is one of the songs from the production of Peter Pan that's going to be at the JDHS Theater this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 7 o'clock performances Friday and Saturday night, and Saturday matinee, Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. And with me in the studio are Leah, who's playing Tiger Lily.
I've bumped hammers and tongs and burning.
Elias, who's playing Peter.
Dost thou not knoweth what a mother is?
Lydia, who's playing Wendy.
Oh, the cleverness of me.
Hannah, who's playing Smee.
From Stone and Gall, what cozening is this?
Rebecca, who's playing Smitely.
Odds Bob's hammer and tongs. Tis Peter Pan. Catch him dead or alive.
Lexi, playing Toodles.
She's a great ugly girl, and she's mine.
Taylor, who is lost boy twin number two.
I don't say it to brag. I say it because I cannot tell why.
And Clara, who is lost boy number one.
Obesity and bunions.
And Charlotte Truitt, who is the vocal director of this massive cast. And there's about how many others in the cast?
We're excited to have about 44 in this cast.
44 on stage.
44 on stage, yeah.
And you've got them singing as well as you do. You've rehearsed a bunch for this thing. When did you start?
Yes, this group started where auditions were back maybe like around the third week of August.
Wow.
And so it's been a good 12 weeks. And a lot of folks may have seen us out at Nugget Mall where we rehearsed, but they've been working at it hard for quite a long time now.
Now, this is Northern Lights Junior Theater. You're not associated with a school or like that. You go across the board, right?
Across the board, all over the community. We're a nonprofit organization and very driven by parent volunteers.
So what's the age? What do you got all the way from?
We have, in this cast, we have pretty much from third grade through high school.
Ah, okay.
So, young children's theater, but it's extending into the high school years because we've got kids that have been with us now for many, many years. So it's a nice, good cast full of new people and people that have been around a very long time.
Good. We're going to say it all again, but if people want to come see this, how do they get tickets?
Well, they can get tickets online if they go to Northern Lights Junior Theater, also at Hearthside Books and at the Jack. And also they're available at the door. And this year we're very excited and pleased to offer free admittance to the preschoolers. And so this is a great show for those young ones that are looking for that hero Peter Pan and young boys. And I don't know, I think they said even young boys can or girls can dress up on Sunday afternoon for the matinee in their favorite pirate costume or Peter Pan Halloween costume too.
So Peter.
Yes.
Who is really Elias. And Peter, what grade are you in?
I am in eighth grade.
Eighth grade. Okay, is this your, how many plays have you done?
I've done 5 Northern Lights Junior Theater plays before.
And what have you played?
I played Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet, Duty in Grease, I was Lionel in Cinderella, and in The Sound of Music, I was Kurt Von Trapp.
Huh. So you have quite a theatrical background at this point.
Yes, I love acting.
Do you?
It's great.
Uh-huh. How did you find that out?
I just thought it'd be something fun to try, and I did, and I love it. It's great.
So how old were you when you played your first part?
I think I was 8 or 9.
Hmm. So you spend your life basically in the middle of this theater, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wendy.
Yes.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. When did you get started?
My first play was A Midnight Cry.
And that was when?
I don't know.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I'd say at least 3 years ago.
I was like 8.
Yeah.
So probably 4 years.
And now you're in the what grade?
I'm in 7th grade.
You're in 7th grade? Okay. And the two of you, Peter and Wendy, you have to do a lot of stage work together.
Yeah.
Was that comfortable for the two of you? Did you have any problems getting so you could work off of each other?
It was great. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So is she a natural with her lines?
She is. She's very good at that.
I talked to the old experienced actor here to find this out. So Tiger Lily. Tiger Lily has you have a very interesting part here.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel when you got that part? Did you audition for it?
Or did
you guys just do open readings and then you were picked for parts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what did you think when you came up being Tiger Lily?
I was really excited I knew that she was a big dancer in that, and So it was my first big dancing role. No, I'm not a dancer.
Oh. Well, see, that's pretty good. And we just add, we have, for folks around town who have seen Janice Hurley's choreography, she's also done the choreography for this show.
Okay.
So we've got some big dance numbers, and that Ugga Wug gets just about everybody on the stage singing and doing percussion, and it's a pretty big fun number.
So can we have another song?
Sure.
Well, let's do it.
How about something from the Pirates? Okay.
We're bloody buccaneers, and each a murderous crook. We massacre Indians, kill little boys, and cater to Captain Hook. Yo-ho, yo-ho, the terrible Captain Hook.
Uh-huh. Rebecca. So,
yes.
Tell me about this part you have. You get to be a little evil, right?
No, I'm a lost boy.
Oh, okay.
And,
Well, a little crazy then, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Very crazy.
Okay.
It's been a lot of fun because my character is very conceited because he thinks he knows everything. It's a lot of fun.
So conceited she plays, but there was this little moment here when we were doing those first lines when we have two of our actors here are a little smaller than the rest of the actors. So who picks them up and holds them up in front of the mic? Huh?
Yeah,
the conceited actress, right?
The conceited
okay, good enough.
So we've got some nice older cast members who help the young ones, which is one of the really fun things about Northern Lights Junior Theater. Yep.
So you kind of watch out for Taylor and for Clara?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're on stage together as Lost Boys. So we got the little twins and some of the older and our gang of boys.
So you get to be kind of dirty on stage, don't you? Yeah, lots of splashing around with stuff and like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taylor, do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
She's going to lift you up if we
can. Yeah.
So what grade are you in, Taylor?
Third.
Third grade? Where do you go to school?
I'm homeschooled.
Oh, you're homeschooled. Okay, cool. We have parents out in the next room who are watching us through the hall here, and I think Taylor's mom just came to the window. Anyway,
yeah.
So, and also we have Clara, who's Lost Boy Twin number one. Now she's getting lifted up to the microphone by our hero here. Okay, so what grade are you in?
Third grade.
Third grade. Okay, so both third graders. So was it hard to learn your lines?
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah. But who helped you?
My mom.
Yeah, I thought so. She coached you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And let's see, we have Smee here.
Yes.
So Smee, who's playing Hook?
Robert.
Robert Newman is playing our Hook.
Okay. So you're sort of Hook's Batman.
Oh yes, definitely.
Yeah, well Robin to Batman, I guess would be the current parlance. So, but you got some good lines in.
Yes.
Yeah, you get. What was that line you gave us at the start?
That's actually Hook's line, which
okay.
is yeah.
Okay. Well, give me a Smee line. What is
What's a mother?
Good enough. You should see her eyes, folks. I wish we could get eyes on radio. There's got to be some way to put that together. Okay. And then over in the corner there, I got Toodles. So,
yes.
Lexi, what's Toodles? Who is that?
Toodles is kind of the shy one who's afraid of pirates and Indians, and he always is trying to find some way to find his marbles, and he can't because they're back at the Darling Nursery somehow.
So, are you shy?
No.
The consensus in the room is that this lady is not shy, folks.
No.
Think of it as a universal. A universal. Let's see. So, who have I not had? I think that got around to almost everybody. So, now it comes to Charlotte.
Okay.
So, Charlotte, how big is this? How many numbers are there?
Oh, gosh.
Vocal numbers.
there's at least a dozen good vocal numbers. And, you know, when you're looking at the musical score, there are like 57 numbers of music, you know, in between. So, yeah, there's a lot of great songs like Never Never Land, I'm Flying, Distant Melody is a lovely duet between Wendy and Peter. And then there's the Hooks Tango. And, boy, when you see these kids tango, that is going to just be a showstopper. Those kids are phenomenal. And lots of good songs from Hook. And, of course, the beautiful Tender Shepherd, which is the sweet, precious, prayerful moment with the in the nursery. And, gosh, there's just so many fun songs in this production. I think people will really enjoy it.
Well, let's do this one more time now.
Okay.
This is Peter Pan. It's being put on by the Northern Lights Junior Theater. It's at JDHS, Friday at 7, Saturday 2 and 7, and Sunday 2 o'clock matinee. Tickets cool. are online at Hearthside at the Jack, and preschoolers get in free.
That's right.
An amazing production. Can you give us a closing number here?
Okay. How about a little bit more of Won't Grow Up?
Cause Neverland will always be the home of youth and joy and liberty. I'll never grow up, never grow up, never grow up. Not me.
Thank you very much.
This is Bird Note. Let's eavesdrop on a family of great horned owls. Here, a fledgling is calling to be fed, and judging from the young bird's persistence, the parents seem to be responding only with calls, not food. Hoots of the male great horned owl are lower in pitch than those of the female. Now, listen for the moment the female flies in to join the male. Days later, about 11 p.m., we hear the juvenile calling again. In fact, these entreaties can go on for weeks. We're hearing the female respond, but both parents seem to be making the point that it's time for Junior to feed himself. They've been bringing voles and rabbits for months. Silence and surprise are keys to their success as hunters, so it's hard to imagine the juvenile improving his chances by being so loud. We can guess what the parents are conveying, but wouldn't it be fun to know for sure? For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It's 20 minutes after 3. This is Pat Moore. I'm hosting Juno Afternoon today. And we just cleared the studio out of most of the cast of Peter Pan. And there are two guests here with me now, Rosemary Greening and Nancy Woods. And they are here representing hospice. This has been we're doing this every Tuesday through the month of November. And we've been talking about some of the various aspects of hospice. And today's sort of a general information, I guess. So, Rosemary, tell me what your position is or how come you're representing hospice for us?
Well, my position, I am in a unique and wonderful position. Program director, but I job share that position with Nancy Davis. So we try to split the work, and it enables both of us to lend our services to the agency, and we're quite happy to do that.
A wonderful arrangement.
Oh, I recommend it.
Yeah.
We were both retired, and we have very busy other lives, and this enabled us to continue staying in a field that we really enjoy and do something that we feel is profoundly worthwhile for the community, as well as having, you know, the rest of our lives too.
Mm-hmm. Nancy?
I'm a newcomer to hospice about a year and a half ago and a newcomer to Alaska. I relocated specifically for this job, and my role is as the clinical coordinator of hospice, which means both Rosemary and Nancy, all of the three of us are all nurses, and my job is to work with our staff, our nurses, and with the nurses' aides, the social workers, the volunteers, all the people within the organization, as well as to have a ongoing relationship with our referring physician community and also with patients and their families with whom we serve. That sometimes we'll get referrals originally from physicians, but oftentimes we have people who call and say, we have this need. My family member has this need. Are you the correct organization to be helping us? So I help them sort that out. I help the doctors sort out those kind of issues. And then we all work together to get the patient and the family to have the services that are appropriate for their care.
So hospice, it is. There may be people who are confused about what the mission of hospice is or why someone is involved with hospice. Could you clarify that? Explain how someone, you say that sometimes you're contacted by doctors, sometimes you're contacted, but what is the need? What triggers someone coming to hospice?
First, I would like to clarify that we are a dual service agency.
Okay.
Our name, which can be confusing, is Hospice and Home Care of Juneau. And we serve two functions. One is we serve hospice needs, and the other is home health needs. And to clarify, they both parts of the agency require a physician's referral. People who receive home health care are people who have an illness or a surgery, or they've been recently discharged from the hospital and they continue to have skilled care needs in the home, and the physician refers to our agency as a skilled nursing service. The hospice side of our program also brings the same type of services, but they are specifically for people who are at the end of what has been maybe a chronic illness or a short-term illness that is going to be terminal. And cancer is one of the classic conditions where people, if they've achieved all of the help that they can from treatments and they really have reached the end portion of that disease, then it's a good segue for hospice to become involved. But there's other terminal conditions as well, and those could be any chronic illness that someone has that they have reached the end point of that illness, and that can be liver disease, kidney disease, heart disease, pulmonary disease, and some of the more difficult neurological diseases such as Lou Gehrig's or ALS. And then we come in as a hospice to provide support to those families and those patients.
So when we think about home care, these are circumstances where someone is recovering from perhaps an operation or has some other reason that they need frequent
right.
Visits. And so does a nurse come in? What kinds of helpers?
Of services? They are, well, what we in the business describe as skilled services, and that would be a registered nurse. And generally a registered nurse will be the person who goes to the home to actually do the admission. We also have occupational therapists, physical therapist, home health aides, and we have a social worker, and those would be our home health components and any other referring entity that we of a skilled service we might need, such as a dietitian. On the hospice side, we have all those services plus a volunteer coordinator and a chaplain. Mm-hmm. But right, for home care, there are people who need continuing services in that healthcare arena because they are homebound. They must be essentially homebound in that they cannot leave their home to access those services in the community.
Nancy, how does the clinical side of this made up to the home side?
As far as the home side, the focus of our services are they can be chronic for people who have, again, what is a skilled service, meaning that it would have to be something that needs to be done by either a physician or a nurse, and they may need this on an ongoing basis. In large part, the focus of home care, though, is to help people transition back to independence in the community. There are some people who are long-term patients of ours, but in general, we try to get in, we try to assess, we try to teach, we try to get the appropriate services into the patient, and hopefully the patient is moving forward towards getting back into the community independently so that they can either continue those services but to access them independently by going out to the physical therapist, to going out to speech therapy, whatever their needs are. Some people are homebound for a long period of time and continue to have needs that only can be administered by someone with a license, and so we continue to have some people long-term. But the main goal is to get people back into the community. With hospice, it's a different, an entirely different goal. And our nurses do provide services both to the home care patients and to the hospice patients. They're very skilled at knowing both sides of the work, and the physicians are responsible both for the referring, but there's a component to our agency where oftentimes we can supplement what the physician has been able to help the patient and their family understand about their terminal circumstances. And additionally, our philosophy and our mission is to provide services to patients with the goal of them having the longest, most, with the highest quality of life available to whatever for whatever time is left for them on the planet. Additionally, we continue to provide services in the form of bereavement and outreach to their families for at least 13 months after the patient passes on.
In one of our earlier sessions, we talked about some of the grief counseling that is part of the hospice offering, and that's a component. You mentioned on a couple of occasions, you said our nurses and our doctors. That would imply that there must be some kind of training or qualification for the people that you work with in the program. Is that correct?
Well, we are all registered nurses on the nursing side of the picture, and the nurse is considered the case manager. When we interview for nurses, we have people who have come to us with a variety of backgrounds. Some of them have previous hospice or home care experience, and some of them do not. I came to Juneau with 20 years of hospice experience. That was really my focus, and my home care experience was not as good. So I've been learning that part of the agency because there are different criteria. But my experience with hospice nurses is, and with home care nurses, all nurses generally start out in an institutional setting, and they move and generally grow to a hospice or home care environment because you need to have a lot of miles on your nursing shoes to understand the complexity of working independently out in a patient's home and to be able to communicate all the variety of patient needs, both in terms of clinical data and also psychosocial data, to the physician. You're the eyes and ears of the physician for the family and the patient, so you have to be able to wrap that all into a package that is understandable to the physician and keep going back and sort of modifying and modulating what is ordered by the physicians. We are always under physician orders for anything that we do, so if we say, you know, this is something that we observe, we'd really like to do this, we still are operating always under a physician's order. The physician in the hospice arena is we have a medical director who's Dr. Bob Urata from Valley Medical. But we also always have the patient's primary care provider, and together those two physicians work with us to help provide services for the patient and their family members.
At the beginning, you said that some of the patients who are involved with hospice care or with home care come directly to the agency. So if someone felt that they needed to start the contact from their end, how would they do that? How do they contact you?
They contact us primarily over the phone, or they might walk in the door. And they come with many questions, and they're sometimes, well, often they just don't know where to begin. And so we'll have quite a good talk with them, and we take the time to hear what their problem is and their situation. But they are then guided to their physician, and or in the case of a friend or a family member, to, you know, make a call to that physician and just say, of course, they can't always speak for that person without permission, but they could alert the physician that this is something, or maybe another family member if the individual themselves won't make the call. But in one way or another, we tell them about our services. We do steer them toward the patient's physician, and then the referral comes from the physician. And sometimes we make the call to the physician. So there's a variety of ways, but ultimately the physician will be involved.
What telephone number?
Our telephone number is 463-6111.
And if somebody wanted to walk in, you're located?
Well, that's not so easy to describe, but it's we're in the St. Anne's building, which is 419 6th Street. Huh. And walking in any door will get you directed to our particular spot in the building. We're located in the back of the building on the ground
level. So basically
level.
The St. Anne's building.
Basically the St. Anne's building.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Thank you very much. My guests have been Rosemary Greening, who's the program director, and Nancy Woods, the clinical coordinator for the Juno Hospice and Home Care, I guess it's Hospice and Home Care of Juno, and that's a division of Catholic Community Services. Thank you very much for sharing with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 15th of November, 2011. It's the birthday of the newspaper columnist Franklin Pierce Adams, born Chicago, 1881. Had a very popular column entitled The Conning Tower, which he signed with his initials, F.P.A. Remembered now mainly for the fact that it launched the careers of Dorothy Parker and James Thurber. It's the birthday of the poet Marianne Moore, born in Kirkwood, Missouri, 1887, a famous character among the literati of New York, going out in public in a black cape and a tricorn hat. And it's the birthday of the artist Georgia O'Keeffe, born Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, 1887. She sent some charcoal drawings to a friend who showed them to Alfred Stieglitz, who hung them in his gallery in New York, and that was her first show. He convinced her to move to New York from Texas, where she'd been teaching. He promoted her work, and he fell in love with her. And in 1924, they were married. She painted flowers and dramatic cityscapes and bleached bones, and he photographed her more than 500 times over the years. Stieglitz and O'Keeffe wrote each other many, many letters, sometimes three or four a day. The first volume of their correspondence, entitled My Faraway One, was published earlier this year. O'Keeffe's other great love was the landscape around Taos, New Mexico. Took her first trip there in 1929, went back every summer to paint, and after Stieglitz died in 1946, she moved there permanently. Gave up painting in oils when her eyesight failed in the mid-70s, continued to work in pencil and watercolor, and then began sculpting with clay until just 2 years before her death in 1986, at the age of 98. Here's a poem for today by Kenneth Rexroth, Falling Leaves and Early Snow. In the years to come, they will say, they fell like the leaves in the autumn of 1939. November has come to the forest, to the meadows, where we picked the cyclamen. The year fades with the white frost on the brown sedge in the hazy meadows, where the deer tracks were black in the morning. Ice forms in the shadows, disheveled maples hang over the water. Deep gold sunlight glistens on the shrunken stream. Somnolent trout move through pillars of brown and gold. The yellow maple leaves eddy above them, the glittering leaves of the cottonwood, the olive, velvety alder leaves, the scarlet dogwood leaves, most poignant of all. In the afternoon, thin blades of cloud move over the mountains. The storm clouds follow them. Fine rain falls without wind. The forest is filled with wet, resonant silence. When the rain pauses, the clouds cling to the cliffs and the waterfalls. In the evening, the wind changes. Snow falls in the sunset. We stand in the snowy twilight and watch the moon rise in a breach of cloud. Between the black pines lie narrow bands of moonlight, glimmering with floating snow. An owl cries in the sifting darkness. The moon has a sheen like a glacier. A poem by Kenneth Rexroth, Falling Leaves and Early Snow, from the collected shorter poems published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 20 minutes to 4. Pat Moore hosting Juno Afternoon today. There's a winter storm warning out. Starts at 6 p.m. this evening, runs till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Looking like overnight, 3 to 6 inches of snow with lows around 28. Southeast winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour, and those should speed up to 15 to 25 miles per hour late tonight. And then Wednesday, snow diminishes in the afternoon, and for the next 4 or 5 days, it'll be in the 20s, so the snow will be around. And my next two guests now have to figure out how they're going to do discovery days hip deep in snow. So
We like snow. There's no complaints from us on the weather, for sure, and we've got some great things planned.
Beth Weigel and Christine Amor are here to talk about the upcoming plans for Discovery Days.
That's right. So this coming Monday, November 21st, it's the kickoff of the Thanksgiving week and all that, but the kids don't have school again, so they're going to get Monday off. And we like to run a Discovery Day when the kids have the day off, so there's something they can do while their parents go to work. And we've got a pretty exciting program planned. Why don't you tell them a little bit about the program for Monday, Christine?
Yeah, so not only do we have the snow for Monday, but we also are going to practice some archery skills out in the Montana Creek area. So we're going to go over to the Juno Hunting Complex and do some archery skills, and then we're going to hike and probably have lunch from, I don't know exactly what time, but it's basically from 9 in the morning to 4 p.m.
Oh. Right. So we do have a fleet of snowshoes at Discovery Southeast, and if the snow stays deep out there, which it's probably going to do out in Montana Creek area and the West Glacier Trail area by Skater's Cabin, I think we'll be hauling out the snowshoes. So we've got some snowshoes for kids to tromp around in the snow. Kanan Bosler is also going to be leading that hike. And like Christine said, it's a day adventure. Now, the thing that's putting a little bit of a change into things, we aren't going to provide the pickup with our van because the weather has changed and we don't drive our van in the winter conditions. It's just safer for us. And so we'll have people drop the kids off at the, as Christine said, at the Juno Hunter Education Shooting Complex, which is a fish and game complex there, just down Montana Creek Road. It's about half mile or a little bit more, maybe 0.8 miles on Montana Creek Road there.
You turn left and go off.
Yeah, when you get to the V, you go V to the left, and it's just another little bit there. And we are going to try and work out some plans for alternative transportation if you do need some assistance with that. We're working on that, so we'll either, get some names of people who are willing to carpool or do something with the bus system or something like that. So we'll make a plan so that kids can get out there. We can have more than just the 13 this way as well, so we'll have plenty of space, and we encourage parents to call and sign their children up, any kid between 7 and 12, for Discovery Day on Monday.
So you're probably in the phone book, but what's the telephone?
463-1500, or you can always email us at info@discoverysoutheast.org. So that's the exciting news for the kids, is Monday's Discovery Day. But we've got some other exciting things coming up in our near future here as well for the older folks that are not only members, but people who would like to become members. We're sort of in our membership drive phase for the fall and winter here, and we like to offer a variety of membership events and benefits to our members. So we have another slideshow coming up on Thursday, December 1st, and it's all about working in Antarctica. So some great slides will be provided, and a talk by Keith Thompson and Hiram Henry. Both folks have worked in Antarctica in different ways down there, and have some awesome slides to share. We'll do that at the Silver Bow at 7 p.m. on December 1st. And, of course, if you're not a member, you're still welcome to come, and you may, learn a little bit more about Discovery Southeast and what we do to connect people to nature. But bring your friends, and that'll be a fun evening. And then December 2nd is First Friday, of course, and we are so lucky because Foggy Mountain partners up with us to offer a membership benefit to our members where they get 20% off at anything in the store for that little bit of time. So it's a big draw for people who want to get some gear and maybe didn't find what they wanted at the ski swap or something. So lots of opportunity to do that. And Christine will have some fun kid activities. Santa, of course, is right next door at the Capital City Weekly. And so it'll be an exciting 2.5 hours or so. It'll be about 4:30 to 7 that we'll be doing our member event at Foggy Mountain on December 2nd.
It'll be kind of nice, too, because parents can use that advantage of going and shopping with the 20% off deal. But we're also going to have some really fun adaptation games and fun wintry crafts and things for the kids to do, so it'll be really great.
So we encourage you to check our website at discoverysoutheast.org. The other thing we've got going on December 1st as well is we'll be out at the university. Some students are putting together a sustainability day event from 10 to 2. So we'll be out there talking about composting and vermiculture and have our composting bin out there, and you can learn all about the anatomy of a worm as well as some other cool stuff. The students are working really hard on that, so it'll be fun. Those are the main things coming up for Discovery Southeast.
So a quick recap.
Okay. So
Monday? You want them dropped off at the archery range or the shooting range at 9 o'clock in the morning. Is that right?
Right. And we do need people to register for the event. So you need
so
to call us
to
at 463-1500.
Like
yep. So we know who's to be expected and get all the forms signed and everything. But that'll be from 9 to 4 on Monday, Discovery Day. They'll start the day off with some archery skills at the complex there. So you're inside, kind of staying a little warmer. And then we'll head outside, if possibly with snowshoes, possibly on foot, but definitely doing some winter romping around in that area after the archery skills.
Okay, and the membership?
The membership programs? Events, we've got a slideshow on December 1st with Keith Thompson and Hiram Henry sharing some slides on Antarctica and their time working down there. And on December 2nd, another membership event for 20% off at Foggy Mountain for our Foggy First Friday event
in
December.
And the date for the University of Alaska program?
That's also on December 1st.
Outstanding. Thank you very much for coming down and sharing this with us.
Thank you.
we're hosting Juno Afternoon today. It's about 11 minutes before 4 o'clock, and I have in the studio now three people who are going to cause hunger to be visible at Thunder Mountain High School, I think this week, that is Saturday, right? Okay, so with me are Mackenzie Derego and Sarsha Hazelton and Kristen Garreau. And tell me about this event that you're planning.
We're planning the hunger
banquet. Hang on. There. Now tell me.
Planning the hunger banquet?
Well, let's see. Now tell me. Good.
The hunger banquet is an event we're planning for just to show kind of the community what it's like to not have as much food as maybe we have here. And it's just a kind of a visual of what poverty is like around the world.
So how does it work?
Well, the way we did it last year was, as you walked in, you like paid I think it was like $5, and you got a card, and it said if you were like lower class or if you were middle class or if you were high class, and the high class gets fed like really nice with like waiters and like tables and like a good meal, and then the middle class gets like
beans and rice.
Yeah, beans and rice, and then the lower class just gets like rice, and then we have like a speaker. And, like, people talk about hunger and, like, different relationships between countries around the world.
And we're doing this in order to raise contributions for the food bank. And so the entrance fee is $5 or 2 cans of food, and we'd really love the cans of food more than the money. And then we'll take all of that we get and donate it to the food bank. So it's a nice way to give back in the community.
So, Kristen, I think you're one of the teachers.
I am. I'm the sponsor for the Model United Nations Activity okay. Club, which is who's sponsoring this along with
so
the National Honor Society.
Okay.
Yeah, so these are students who are part of.
Are you both MUN or?
Yeah, we're, okay. And she's in National Honor Society.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So, I did this years ago in our church.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to get the lower class peasant group. And
yeah.
I remember a meal of, I think I had bread and some kind of juice. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah, basic meal.
And we watched, indeed, as you said, we watched two people be waited on who had drawn the blue cards. Anyway, so you did it last year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What'd you get?
I think I was the middle class.
Middle class?
I remember being the middle class.
How'd it feel?
Well, you got to sit on the chairs. You weren't, like, sitting on the floor like the other people,
mm-hmm.
so that was nice. But, I mean, you were eating beans and rice and water, and so, like, you get to see all these people eating spaghetti around you, and it kind of sucks.
How many people showed up when you went through?
Like, 50?
50.
There were, like, 50 people.
Maybe not quite 50. We're aiming for more people.
This
year we're going to have 50. Okay, so
yeah.
So do you remember what that attendance was?
We probably had about 25 people there. We had a couple
okay.
of families and our group.
So how did it split?
So,
how many of each class did you?
I want to say the upper class group is about 10%.
Okay.
So we had maybe
like
five or six people. We had kind of five or six people, and then maybe half and half for the rest, although it should probably be the majority of the group is comprised of the lowest,
uh-huh.
that underdeveloped from underdeveloped countries. So
how do you set the menu? Does it come to you, or do you
can
make
talk
it up?
About what we're serving on
you can
right?
talk about what we're serving.
Yeah.
So we had a meeting about it at lunch today, and we were talking about a smoked salmon fettuccine for the higher class, and going like a dish like that at like Twisted Fish is like expensive, and it's really good. And
mm-hmm.
then I think we talked about rice and beans again for the middle class, and then just rice for the lower class, along with like juice and like regular drink stuff. But
water.
I think the lower class gets water.
Yeah. Have you done one of these before?
Yeah, I did it last year as well.
Okay. Wait, do you remember what class you
fell in? I was a waiter.
Ah, okay.
So I didn't really experience it as much.
Did you get to eat in the kitchen?
No, because everybody else ate all the food. But my dad went, and he was he drew a middle class ticket, but then the provider for his family lost their job, and so he had to go, he became a lower class and ended up eating rice that night, but really enjoyed eating beans and rice for the next week because he really, really likes beans and rice. So, I mean, it was interesting to see how other people saw it. And we had some really good speakers last year, and so we're going to have a pretty good speaker this year, too, as well.
So who's the speaker?
The speaker this year is one of our new teachers on staff at Thunder Mountain, Pat Roach, who is our culinary arts teacher. And he just finished up a two-year experience in the Peace Corps working in rural China. And so he's going to share some of those experiences with us. Last year we had a couple of returned Peace Corps volunteers who had been in the Peace Corps many, many years ago. They had a high school daughter, and they had been in the Peace Corps in the 80s, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
And so they were talking about those experiences in their past, and it's really interesting, I think, to bring those experiences here to Juneau. We don't have a lot of opportunities to go to rural China necessarily, and so bringing those pictures and visuals to the kids here is really important, I think.
There's a wonderful song that I heard years ago, and this guy is volunteering in Haiti, and he's asked by a man whose hair he's cutting if he's rich, and he says to him, "I don't know if I'm rich or not." And the guy says, "Did you eat today?" And he says, "If you eat every day, you're rich." So it can be lower than low class. These events, I think, bring home something that is very hard for most of us to even fathom, and that is the idea that you may go through a day without food. Very seldom does that happen to anyone, that we know.
Right, and this fits in really well with our Model UN preparation this year. We're going to a conference in Anchorage, the UAA Model UN conference, and the whole topic this year is surrounding the work on the Millennium Development Goals of the last 10 years, and a lot of those are about bringing the world out of poverty,
mm-hmm.
and that goal. And so we'll be talking a lot about that as the year progresses, as the kids get ready to go to that. And so this is one way to help bring some of that learning to them and educate them on that topic that they'll be working on.
So this is open to anyone who wants to
yep,
come?
Yep, it's open to anyone in the community.
Okay, and what time do they need to be where? It's Saturday?
It's Saturday, the 19th, at the Thunder Mountain, in the Thunder Mountain Commons, and it'll be from 6 to about 8, and we'll just have a good time.
Okay, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Have an educated time.
We'll have an educated time. Some of us who draw the bad tickets are going to be eating rice and not having quite as good a time as everyone else.
Going home and
but
eating dinner again.
That's indeed the purpose of the event, is to...
Right.
To
and again, we'd rather have your contributions of food for the food bank or $5, but it's all about raising...
But the preferred entrance price is 2 cans.
Preferred entrance price is 2 cans of food, or 2 pieces of food, boxes.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, good luck, and I hope. Are you serving, or are you?
I think I'm participating.
You're participating. Well, good luck on the draw. The salmon fettuccine awaits, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
Tomorrow on Juno afternoon, Jeff will be talking with people from Juno Lyric Opera about their presentation of La Boheme. It opens this weekend at Nefetri's Hall. Todd Jones will be here to talk about the extreme film One for the Road, showing this Friday at the Jack. And he'll have details about Saturday's trail mix and dinner auction with Rogers Almanac, music, and more on Juno afternoon tomorrow at 3. We have a winter storm warning out for Juno and the vicinity. Snow showers are likely tonight with a snow accumulation of up to 3 to 6 inches. The lows will be around 28. Southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour will increase to 15 to 25 miles per hour late. So buckle up, Juno. It's going to be a snowstorm. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. K2OO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can listen on K210 AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau at digital channel 87. We're on channel 872 with KRNN, and KXLL is on 873, and we're also online at ktoo.org.